It's Elise here. Thank you so much if you're listening again. And as always, welcome if you're a new listener. So we are back with part 2, episode 9 of Unsolved Mysteries, what I'm calling histories and mysteries. And back with me is my lovely friend Brianne. So as I mentioned, Brianne is an insanely talented photographer, and I will link her website and social media again in the blog and also at the end of this episode again. So I'm not going to babble on today. Let's just jump right back into these mysteries. Okay, well, let's get into today's stories. So I'm going to start off with this crazy old case called Bella and the Witch Elm. Have you heard of this?
No, I love it. Okay. I already love it.
I didn't know what a witch elm was. Have you seen one?
No.
This is a witch elm.
Whoa. Where do they grow? Everywhere?
I think everywhere, but I've never seen anything like this. Check out the blog so you can take a look.
It looks like a tornado of branches.
Like almost like a witch's broom, right?
Totally.
April 18th, 1943, in Hagley Wood, England, four boys were out looking for birds' nests. They were in the Hagley Woods, and this part was actually part of an estate, so it was on this property called Hagley Hall.
Okay.
They knew they were trespassing, so they were being cautious not to get caught, but of course kids are
little
like,
boys.
We're just looking for birds' nests. So they came upon a witch elm. And they believed this would be a great place to find nests. And when you see it, you'll see why. Because it looks like a giant nest.
Wild.
So Bob Farmer climbed the tree and peered inside and saw a white object. He thought, oh, great, it's an egg.
Oh, God.
So he reached in and grabbed it, only to realize his mistake.
It's a skull.
It was a human skull. Yeah. He quickly replaced it, and the boys vowed never to speak of it again. Because, of course, when they're kids, they're more concerned. Like, we're going to get in trouble to be here. However, just a few hours later, the youngest boy in the group was really upset. And he ended up telling his parents. So listen out there, kids, if you're listening. Always report a body.
Please, always.
Yeah. They'll be more happy about that than you were looking for bird's nests on private property. But so the place was quickly cordoned off, and the police discovered just how horrific the situation was. So inside the tree, they found the woman's skeleton.
Oh.
It was almost complete except for the fact that one of her hands was missing, and the bones were later found scattered around the tree.
Ew.
So I'm going to show you this little graphic. So this kind of shows like what
they
found.
Oh, they know lots about her.
Yeah.
Wedding ring.
She was about 35. She had very distinct teeth.
Oh, like quite crooked.
Yes. She would have had brown hair. She would have been about 5 feet. They could tell with her clothing. And they also found a piece of brown taffeta in her mouth, like in the mouth of the skull.
Stop.
They believed that the woman would have been placed in the tree when she was still warm. Due to how small it was, they said if rigor mortis had set in, she wouldn't have fit. So she had to be pliable. And so they believed the murder had to have happened close around there, right? She had also been dead for about 18 months, and cause of death was suspected to be suffocation.
Yeah.
Because they had that taffeta in her mouth. So with so many people missing during the war, because it was 1943, right? It was really hard to sift through all the missing persons.
Yeah. They're all missing.
So the Jane Doe had these crooked front teeth. And so they contacted dentists from the area thinking they'd remember if she had gone to the dentist, but nothing. So the case quickly went cold. However, in 1944, a graffiti message appeared on the wall in a place called Birmingham. So here's the map. So here's Hagley Wood, and then there's Birmingham. So they're very close.
Who put Bella in the witch elm?
Yes. So this is another one, but the original one appeared on this wall in Birmingham, and it said, "Who put Bella down the witch elm - Hagley Wood?"
Oh,
right.
Really specific.
Yeah. So they didn't have a name. So they're thinking, is that her name?
Her name's Bella.
Means beautiful. Maybe they're just saying like a beautiful woman. Like they don't know. So now investigators felt like they might have a lead. Obviously, someone out there knew who the killer was. And maybe it was the killer. Right. And they're sort of taunting police. Or it's someone just like, figure this out.
So weird.
Since the 1970s, the message appears sporadically. Every couple of years. Isn't that crazy? And usually it's on an obelisk. So that's this.
Right.
Which is near Hagley Wood. So closer to where the body was found. So theories about what could have happened to her range from ritual killings by a coven of witches. That's a really popular one.
Yeah, the tree.
The tree, exactly. But the other really popular theory is German espionage, which is kind of interesting.
Very different.
Right? I know. It's like either a coven of witches or you were a spy. So, but honestly, not really any like other things
she
came
was
up.
German?
They think she could have been a German spy.
A spy. Oh.
So there was an MI5 declassified document about a man put to death at the Tower of London in 1941 named Joseph Jacobs. On his way was found a photo of his lover, Clara Bowerly. He said that she was training to be a spy and might have been sent to England after him. Oh. Yeah, so people believe that Clara could have been Bella. She was an actress, and she was never seen again in another film after the time of, like, when she would have been murdered. So people wonder if it's her. However, I found another story that says in 2016, it was actually uncovered that she did pass away in Berlin in 1942, so it couldn't be her. So I wanted to keep that in.
If she was an actress, you would have known her teeth.
Exactly. You would have recognized that right away.
Yeah.
So that one sounded fishy to me, but I put it in because I thought if other people out there...
seems pretty legit.
Yeah. And some people might be believing like, oh, yeah, I heard and I think it's she's the spy lady. No, I don't think so. And obviously, if that woman passed away,
yeah,
it wouldn't have been her.
No.
Some people still believe she could have been a spy. But again, I just feel like what's the point of putting her in a witch elm? Like, that just doesn't make sense to me, you know?
And that the messages keep appearing.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So police still believe the killer would have had local knowledge because this was a good place to conceal a body.
Right.
So you'd think people would be like, ooh, let's put her in this tree because there's a huge one in the Hagley Wood.
Yeah.
Right? Who would just stumble upon that? So that's what they say is the chance that a murder occurred and then they just happened to be right near this giant crazy looking tree that the body could fit in just seems kind of
It was planned.
Yeah. So local legend has it that Hagley Wood is known for and associated with the occult.
Oh.
Yes. According to Professor of Anthropology, Professor Margaret Murray believes that Bella was possibly the victim of a black magic ritual.
Yes.
You're like, I'm in it. Yes, I'm all for it. So the hand removed was indicative of a ritual called the Hand of Glory. Have you ever heard of that before? Yeah, I had never heard of this before. So in the ritual, when someone was hanged usually, then the witches would take the hand. It would be pickled.
Oh,
yeah, in specific ways, like with urine and like weird things. So it would be pickled. And actually, it's crazy. I didn't get a picture, but there's pictures of like these hands from famous cases and all the stuff, right? And then it would usually be used in various rituals and even turned into a candle. So they would, they would put wax in between the candle. Right. They'd do their ritual and then they would burn it. It was to give power.
And if her hand's missing, that sounds pretty legit.
Yeah. And there are theories that, like, it was not taken by force. It was just an animal.
Mm.
And it's hard because we don't know exactly how it was positioned. So, I mean, maybe if her arm was positioned above her head. But I find that weird. Like, why wouldn't they have taken other things?
Yeah.
So, I don't know if I like that theory, but.
Hand of Glory. Fascinating.
Yes. So, the Hand of Glory. You learn something new. Mm-hmm. The fact she was entombed in a tree and not buried was also something that stood out to her as proof of a ritualistic slaying, which I agree. Investigators have dismissed the theory. And like I say, they said that it's scavenging animals who just scattered the bones from the hand. Now, the biggest question is where the hell are her bones? They took the skeleton from the tree, but no police department around there has the bones. No one knows where they went.
Oh.
I know. So that's super weird.
So someone took them.
Yeah. Then it makes you think who and why.
Yeah. What do you want with them?
Yeah. Okay. So the last case we're going to talk about is the case of the Erickson twins. I think I asked you. You haven't heard this one either, right? Okay.
I've heard none of these stories.
So this case has to do with the theory of twins having an extra-worldly connection.
Oh.
And even I think siblings and there's this.
Twins have something special.
Twins, it's something special. And especially identical. And they're identical.
Okay.
So yeah, we've heard of the stories where like a twin will break their arm and then a twins and, you know, at camp across the country and they feel the pain, or yes, my twin is scared and I cry.
Sympathetic.
Yeah, exactly. So what about one twin suffering a psychotic break and the other being pulled in as well?
Weird.
So that's what this is about. So Sabina and her identical twin sister, Ursula.
Of course.
Right. Were born in Sweden in 1967. Their youth went by without incident of mental illness or any incidents for that matter. They had two older siblings. They appeared to be regular kids. Nothing of note. In 2000, Ursula was actually living in the U.S. and Sabina was living in Ireland with her partner and two kids. Hmm. And I promise you the kids are fine. Okay. I just want to say that. I'm like, we already had
lots of tragic children.
Yes. So the kids were fine. Ursula came to Ireland in 2008 to visit her sister. And strangely, the sisters secretly departed her home in the evening and headed to Liverpool. So one night, they just left. Yep.
Husband and kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they arrived in Liverpool the following morning and went straight to the police station to make a report about the concerns over the safety of Sabina's children. When the police contacted the Dublin authorities, they learned that Sabina had a fight with her husband, and the concerns about the children were squashed. They weren't worried about it at all. So there was no indication they were in any danger. They were fine. The girls were next placed at a motorway service station where police were actually called out because they were acting really weird. So the Erickson sisters had been on a bus and got off at the motorway station as they said they weren't feeling good. But the bus driver wanted them off anyway, and he didn't actually let them back on the bus. He left them there, and it wasn't a regular stop. They weren't supposed to.
Oh.
But he did not want them back on the bus. Mm. He said the women were acting really weird. They were clinging to their bags and wouldn't let him search them when they were going to get back on.
Right.
So he was really worried about bombs or something.
Who knows?
So the station manager was becoming really nervous and they were just fixated on their bags and being really strange. And they were making really erratic movements and stuff, which kind of reminds me of Elisa Lam. Like, it's so really strange. So the officers talked to the sisters and concluded there was nothing in their bags. They were fine. And they let them go.
Jesus.
Yes.
So, and then the story takes a turn.
I was just going to say, hold on to your hat because things
to get real.
Yeah. The sisters were walking down a busy highway and decided to cross it. Sabina was struck by a car and had like some minor injuries. But of course, the police were called again because they're like walking in the middle of this crazy big motorway. Not only highway agency officers responded, but they also got backup from police from Central Motorway Police Group. They were standing and chatting with the sisters on the shoulder of the road, trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And all of a sudden, without warning, Ursula ran into oncoming traffic.
Yeah.
Into the side of a giant semi.
Oh.
That was traveling about 90K.
Whoa.
Yeah. Everyone was in shock. And so, and I mean, she goes under the wheels. It's crazy.
No. Oh, my God.
So as everyone's in shock, staring at what just happened, Sabina follows suit. She follows her sister's footsteps as they're watching, like in disbelief. She runs and gets hit head on by a car. And I feel so bad for the people driving too.
Oh, you're never the same after like smoking a body.
God, seriously. So both did survive. Like they just thought there's no way.
No.
I think they thought probably they're going to walk over there and she's dead.
For sure.
Both of Ursula's legs had been crushed by the truck. Yeah. So she couldn't get up. But she was awake and fighting with them. And they were trying to treat her. And she was screaming and fighting and spitting on them. So then Ursula was also fighting. She had been unconscious for a little period of time and then came to. So she jumps up.
Oh my God.
Fighting with them, screaming and calling for help. She was screaming for the police, even though they were there. They clearly had their uniforms on. She's screaming for police. Ursula at one point screamed, "I recognize you. I know you're not real." And she screamed to her sister, "They're going to steal your organs."
Oh. So,
And I believe it was, yeah, Sabina, she stood up and actually punched an officer in the face and then ran to the other side of the road to run in front of more traffic. She was caught, restrained, and sedated and put into an ambulance. So do you want to know the craziest part?
Yeah.
It was all caught on video.
Oh, my God. Oh, I might puke. But I'm ready.
So this is so crazy, but a small television crew was actually following the Central Motorway Police, and they film a show called Motorway Cops.
Of course.
So they follow them out to this call of these two women. So I'm going to show Brianne the video right now. So you saw the video.
Yes.
Your eyes are so wide.
I've never... No. The one lady, her legs are crushed.
Oh, yeah.
And then Ursula's one who got hit by the car.
Ursula was the one who went under the semi.
Oh, yeah. So Ursula's crushed, but still yelling. Mm-hmm. Sabina, like, cracks a windshield with her body. The whole mm-hmm. roof is dented and is getting up running.
Yeah.
Takes eight Punching. Men. Yeah. Eight men to hold her, and she's still kicking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't make sense. They're also not big women.
No.
These are thin,
and I was thinking, women. Like, is this bath salts or something? Like, I'm just thinking superhuman strength. Like,
but that's both of them.
Both of them.
At the same time about, like, the same thing.
And it's weird. It was like they had it in their head. We're going to, like, die by car or something. And it was like they were so determined.
Or they just want to commit suicide because they don't want their organs to get stolen?
Yeah. And for Ursula, who went under the truck, like, I just find it so crazy. You'd think you'd lose your nerve, but it's like she didn't even get hit in the front. Like, she ran to the tires and got, like, sucked in.
It's so weird. Yeah. I've never seen such a thing.
And they have a whole 60 minutes documentary, so I'm going to I'll put that documentary up because it's really interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
And it goes through the rest of the story because it did not stop there, of course. So both sisters were taken to the hospital, and obviously with the extent of Ursula's injuries, it meant that she wouldn't be leaving the hospital anytime soon.
Right.
I think also she went into, like, immediate surgery. Like, she had internal organs, issues with that, and they didn't steal them. They, you know, she's fine. But Sabina calmed down. There's actually a video, and I think it's in that 60 Minutes one, where it's her in the holding cell when they get there. So she had just minor injuries. After being hit by a freaking car, she had minor injuries. She
flew in the air.
Flew in the air. And was unconscious. So obviously, like, hit her head. But she's, like, flirting with the officer, talking totally normally. Seems to normal. Totally fine. So they let her go after 5 hours. They're like,
no.
Okay, great.
No.
Yeah. So one really weird thing that they did note, even though they let her go, is she didn't seem concerned at all with her sister.
Right.
Didn't seem to care. It was like she just, that was not in her mind.
Yeah, like, wouldn't you want to stay at the hospital?
Yeah, you're a twin, but no. So the police also noticed she was super calm, and she told them very ominously. She said, "We say in Sweden that an accident rarely comes alone. Usually at least one or more follows, maybe two." And I believe she says that on tape.
Oh, like, Jesus.
And I'm sure those officers probably thinking now, it's like, why we shouldn't have let her go. So in court, she pled guilty to trespassing on the motorway and hitting an officer, and was sentenced to a day in custody, which she had already served. So with the police. I think when they released her 5 hours later, I believe it was after that.
Okay.
So she had spent her day. She had gone to court. They said, yep, you need a day in custody. She already spent it. So, and the police were like, well, she seems fine. So they let her go.
Oh, dear.
So she left court and began to wander the streets. She was carrying her possessions in a standard issue plastic bag from the police. And at 7 p.m., two men saw Sabina, and she said she was looking for her sister. They noted she was super friendly, but also appeared to be really nervous.
Okay.
So 54-year-old Glenn Hollensheed was actually a qualified paramedic, and he was a former airman. So he kind of, I think, took pity on her. Like, right. Caesar, she's got this hospital bag. She seems kind of not quite
there. Yeah, she needs some help.
So he said, if you need a place to stay, like, I can help you.
Bad move, man.
And she said, okay. So went back to Glenn's house, and he and his friend kind of, you know, were trying to talk to her, figure things out, and they noticed really weird behavior. Like, she kept getting out and looking out the window, and so that paranoia was coming back. And she would, like, then offer them a cigarette and then, like, rip it out of their mouths.
Oh.
And then she would say, it's poisoned. It might be poisoned. So they were like, okay. And I'm thinking probably, like, paramedic. He might be thinking, like, she's got some mental issues.
Yeah.
You know. So he let her stay. The next morning, he called his brother and asked him to help locate her sister. He said, this is the name I got. Can you help me? And then I'll help her make her way there or find it. Seems like a nice guy. So then he went to his neighbor's house. He was making some breakfast. He said, I'll borrow some tea bags. And the neighbor saw him go back inside, and then he came out and he was staggering. And he was bleeding.
Oh.
And then collapsed to the ground, and he died right there.
Oh.
So she had stabbed him. And so I'm not sure if then when he went back in, she was like threatened, paranoid.
Thinks it's an intruder.
Yeah. So the neighbor called police and she ran. And she was actually armed with a hammer, which she kept occasionally hitting herself over the head with as she was running. A good Samaritan tried to intervene, and he tackled her to the ground, and she grabbed a roof tile from her pocket and struck him over the head. So he was okay, but he was, like, disoriented, and it was just enough time for her to get away. But by this time, paramedics were on her tail, and Sabina came to a bridge at Heron Cross, and she jumped off a 40-foot-high bridge onto another roadway, breaking both her ankles and fracturing her skull, but she survived.
Oh, my God.
Right? So Ursula was released from the hospital and had an uneventful trip back to the U.S., was fine. I did find one photo of her from a church that she's apparently a part of and has never had any other issue since then. Sabina pled guilty to manslaughter with diminished responsibility. So she stabbed Glenn 5 times.
What?
And during interrogation, which also I think there's a video of it, and if I find it, I'll post it, but all she replies to every single question is no comment, no comment, no comment. Really.
Oh, dark.
Just calm and not there. Both the prosecution and defense agreed that Sabina was insane at the time of the crime, and she was now sane again.
Oh, dear.
So crazy. Like, I'm so interested to find out how you know that, like how you could figure that out.
Well, and how do you know they're not just faking sane?
Yeah. The defense also claimed that she was a secondary sufferer of folie à deux, which is apparently the name for a psychiatric syndrome where symptoms of delusional belief and or hallucinations are transmitted from one person to another, simply referred to sometimes as family madness. So they claim that the psychotic break was Ursula's and that Sabina was the secondary sufferer. I don't know how they'd know that or if that was just their tactic in court. So the judge concluded that Sabina had a low level of culpability in the crimes, and due to this finding, she was sentenced to 5 years in prison minus the 439 days she already spent in custody. The weird thing is there is absolutely no record of anything with Sabina. Nothing.
What?
Some reports have said they both just sort of like went back to their normal lives, but some say that Sabina's just never been seen again.
That was a doozy. Like, it's just weird.
It's just so weird.
And also, like, I understand the family madness thing, but it's like nothing explains like that they were superhuman.
Yeah.
Like, even with adrenaline, mm-hmm. you don't get smoked by a car and just run around.
No. And you'd think that with Ursula, for sure, she went into surgery and all this stuff, you'd think they would have for sure run talks because they want to make sure nothing she took is going to interact with what we give her. And there was nothing. There's nothing ever mentioned about them taking drugs. And of course, there's like insane theories.
What, like, are they?
There's theories that they were part of a government experiment that gives their experimentees LSD. But I'm like, that was something they did do in the 50s. So I'm like, I don't...
Not in the 2000s.
I don't know. But I mean, I have no idea. Well, I'm not secret government, so I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
And that they're both scared of, like, the organs.
Yeah, and they were both really paranoid.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have so many more questions. It's like, why did the one sister come to Ireland?
Yeah.
Why did they feel like they had to flee?
Yeah, that she came and they, like, instantly did this.
Yeah.
They're like, goodbye.
she just didn't care about, like, her sister and clearly just seemed so out of it. But sadly, I mean, it's sad that, like, there was a casualty.
For sure.
You know, and especially his family was really upset that they felt like she wasn't really held responsible.
I would agree.
Which I could understand. I would feel the same way. And they felt like her sentence was not long enough. And they also felt like the police should not have let her go. So that's the end.
So good.
Right?
I just want more now.
I know. I have so much more. I had actually kind of asked you about the Dyatlov Pass one, which is a huge case. So I thought I'll save that. So
yeah,
if you guys want to hear more from Brianne and I and have me just like blow her mind again.
Yeah.
Let us know. Because like I say, I have a lot more cases and stories to talk about. There's so many.
More histories and mysteries.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me. It's so great to be here.
This brings us to the end of part two of Histories and Mysteries. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Again, like I said last time, please let me know if you have your own theories or if you've heard of these, if you've heard anything that I didn't go through. Make sure also to check out the blog so you can see that crazy video of the Erickson twins and watch the entire 60 Minutes episode. It's really, really interesting. I would, of course, like to thank Brianne for coming and sitting with me again today. There wasn't really a fun reincarnation episode to lighten her spirits a little bit, so I hope she's not too terrified tonight. Please make sure to check out her website at briannemarie.photo and check out her Instagram at briannemariephoto. Like I said last time, she's spooky and does some really amazing, amazing photography. So check her out. And I will be back next week, back to the regular format on Halloween. So you will be back with just myself and the microphone. And I will be telling you my first stories from Alberta. I'm really excited for you all to hear the latest stories. And thank you so much for joining me all month in this fun little countdown. I hope you've all enjoyed yourselves. It's been really fun to explore different formats, but truthfully, I'm kind of happy to get back to normal. I would love it if you would all tag Real Scary Podcast in your Halloween photos. I love to see what you're dressing up as, how you decorate for Halloween. And yeah, that's just my own fun. So until next time, this is your friendly neighborhood host, Elise.